Polly was glad there was no mirror. The best that could be said for the squad's new clothing was that it covered them up. But this was a war. You seldom saw new clothes on anybody. Yet they felt awkward, and there was no sense in that at all, but they looked at one another in the chilly light of dawn and giggled in embarrassment. "Wow," Polly thought, "look at us, dressed as women." Oddly enough, it was Igorina who really looked the part. She'd disappeared into the other tumble-down room carrying her pack. For 10 minutes the squad had heard the occasional grunt or ouch, and then she'd returned with a full head of hair, shoulder-length hair. Her face was the right shape, missing the lumps and bumps they'd come to know, and the stitches on her forehead shrank and disappeared as Polly watched in astonishment. "Doesn't that hurt?" she said.
"It smarts a bit for a few minutes," said Igorina. "You just have to have the knack, and a special ointment, of course."
"But why is there a curved scar on your cheek now?" said Tonka. "And those stitches are staying."
Igorina looked down demurely. She'd even restyled one of the dresses into a dirndl and looked like a fresh young maid from the beer cellar. Just to look at her was to mentally order a large pretzel.
"You've got to have something to show," she said, "otherwise you're letting down the clan. And actually, I think the stitches are rather fetching."
"Well, okay," Tonka conceded, "but lisp a bit, will you? I know this is completely wrong, but now you look, oh, I don't know, weird, I suppose."
"Okay, line up," said Jackram. He stood back and gave them a look of theatrical disdain. "Well, I've never seen such a lot of washerwomen in all my life," he said. "I wish you all the luck you're bleeding well going to need. There'll be someone watching the door for you to come out, and that's all I can promise. Private Perks, you're acting unpaid corporal on this one. I hope you've picked up one or two little lessons on our stroll. In and out, that's what you should do. No famous last stands, please. When in doubt, kick him in the nadgers and scarper. Mind you, if you frighten them like you frighten me, you should have no trouble."
"Are you sure you won't join us, Sarge?" said Tonka, still trying not to laugh.
"No, lad, you won't get me in skirts. Everyone has their place, right? The place where they draw the line, well, that's mine. I'm pretty steeped in sin one way and another, but Jackram always shows his colours. I'm an old soldier. I'll fight like a soldier does, in the ranks, on the battlefield. Besides, if I went in there simpering in petticoats, I'd never hear the end of it."
"The Duchess says there is a different path for Sergeant Jackram," said Wazza.
"And I don't know if you don't frighten me worst of all, Private Goom," said Jackram. He hitched up his equatorial belt. "You're right, though. When you're inside, I shall nip down nice and quiet and slip into our lines. If I can't raise a little diversionary attack, my name's not Sergeant Jackram. And since it is Sergeant Jackram, that proves it. Ah, there's plenty of men in this man's army that owe me a favour." He gave a little sniff and added, "Or wouldn't say no to my face. And plenty of likely lads who'll want to tell their grandchildren they fought alongside Jackram too. Well, I'll give them their chance at real soldiering."
"Sarge, it'll be suicide to attack the main gates," said Polly.
Jackram slapped his belly. "See this lot?" he said. "It's like having your own armour. Bloke once stuck a blade in this up to the hilt and was surprised as hell when I nutted him. Anyway, you lads will be making so much fuss the guards will be distracted, right? You're relying on me, I'm relying on you. That's military, that is. You give me a signal, any signal. That's all I'll need."
"The Duchess says your path takes you further," said Wazza.
"Oh, yeah," said Jackram jovially. "And where's that, then? Somewhere with a good pub, I hope."
"The Duchess says it should lead to the town of Scritz," said Wazza.
She said it quietly while the rest of the squad were laughing, not so much at Jackram's comment as a way of losing some of the tension. But Polly heard it. Jackram was really, really good, she thought. The fleeting expression of terror was gone in an instant.
"Scritz? Nothing there," said Jackram. "Dull town."
"There was a sword," said Wazza.
Jackram was ready this time. There was not a flicker of expression, just the blank face that he was so good at. And that was odd, Polly thought, because there should have been something, even if it was only puzzlement.
"Handled lots of swords in my time," he said dismissively. "Yes, Private Holter."
"There's one thing you didn't tell us, Sarge," said Tonka, lowering her hand. "Why is the regiment called the Ins and Outs?"
"First into battle, last out of the fray," said Jackram automatically.
"So why are we nicknamed the Cheesemongers?"
"Yes," said Shufti. "Why, Sarge? Because the way those girls were talking, it sounded like it's something we ought to know."
Jackram made a clicking noise of exasperation. "Oh, Tonka, why the hell did you wait till you got your trousers off before asking me that? I'll feel embarrassed telling you now." And Polly thought, "That's dangling bait, right? You want to tell us. You want to get any conversation away from Scritts."
"Ah," said Tonka, "it's about sex then, is it?"
"Not as such, no."
"Well, tell me then," said Tonka. "I'd like to know before I die. If it makes you feel any better, I'll nudge people and go, kneh, kneh, kneh."
Jackram sighed. "There's a song," he said. "It starts, 'Twas on a Monday morning, all in the month of May.'"
"Then it is all about sex," said Polly flatly. "It's a folk song. It starts with 'twas.' It takes place in May. QED. It's about sex. Is a milkmaid involved? I bet she is."
"There could be," Jackram conceded.
"Going for to market, for to sell her wares?" said Polly.
"Very likely."
"Okay, that gives us the cheese. And she meets, let's see, a soldier, a sailor, a jolly ploughboy, or just possibly a man clothed all in leather, I expect. No, since it's about us, it's a soldier, right? And since it's one of the ins and outs, oh dear, I feel a humorous double entendre coming on. Just one question. What item of her clothing fell down or came untied?"
"Her garter," said Jackram. "You've heard it before, Perks."
"No, but I just know how folk songs go. We had folk singers in the lower bar for 6 months back where I worked. In the end, we had to get a man in with a ferret. But you remember stuff." "Oh, no."
"Was there canoodling, Sarge?" said Tonka, grinning.
"Kayaking, I expect," said Igorina to General Sniggering.
"No, he stole the cheese, didn't he?" sighed Polly. "As the poor girl was lying there, waiting for a garter to be tied, him, him, he damn well made off with her cheese, right?"
"Not damn, not with the skirt on Oz," Tonka warned.
"Then it's not Oz either," said Polly. "Fill your hat with bread, fill your boots with soup, and steal the cheese, eh, Sarge?"
"That's right. We've always been a very practical regiment," said Jackram. "An army marches on its stomach, lads. On mine, of course, it could hold a parade."
"It was her own fault. She should have been able to tie up her own garters," said Lofty.
"Yeah, probably wanted her cheese stolen," said Tonka.
"Wise words," said Jackram. "Off you go, then, cheesemongers."
The mist was still thick as they made their way down through the woods to the path by the river. Polly's skirt kept catching in brambles. It must have done so before she joined up, but she'd never noticed it so much. Now it was seriously hindering her. She reached up and absent-mindedly adjusted the socks, which she'd separated to use as padding elsewhere. She was too skinny, that was the trouble. The ringlets would have been useful there. They would have said, "girl." In their absence, she had to rely on a scarf and a socks change.
"All right," she whispered as the ground levelled out. "Remember, no swearing. Giggle, don't snigger. No belching. No weapons either. They can't be that stupid in there. Anyone bought a weapon?"
There was a shaking of heads.
"Did you bring a weapon, Tonk? Magda?"
"No, Polly."
"No item of any sort with a certain weapon-like quality?" Polly insisted.
"No, Polly,"
said Tonka demurely.
"Anything, perhaps, with an edge?"
"Oh, you mean this?"
"Yes, Magda."
"Well, a woman can carry a knife, can't she?"
"It's a sabre, Magda. You're trying to hide it, but it's a sabre."
"But I'm only using it like a knife, Polly."
"It's 3 feet long, Magda."
"Size isn't important, Polly."
"No one believes that. Leave it behind a tree, please. That is an order."
"All right."
After a while, Shufti, who had appeared to be thinking deeply, said,
"I can't understand why she didn't just tie up her own garter."
"Shufti, what the hell—"
Tonka began.
"Heck," Polly corrected her, "and you're talking to Betty, remember?"
"What the heck are you talking about, Betty?"
said Tonka, rolling her eyes.
"Well, the song, of course. And you don't have to lie down to tie a garter in any case. It'd be more difficult," said Shufti. "It's all a bit silly."
No one said anything for a while. It was perhaps easy to see why Shufti was on her quest.
"You're right," said Polly, eventually. "It's a silly song.
A very silly song, Tonka agreed.
They all agreed. It was a silly song. They stepped out onto the river path. Ahead of them, a small group of women were hurrying around the bend in the cliff. Automatically, the squad looked up. The keep grew out of the sheer cliff. It was hard to see where the unhewn rock ended and the ancient masonry began. They could see no windows. From here, it was just a wall extending to the sky. No way in, it said. No way out. In this wall are few doors, and they close with finality. This close to the deep, slow river, the air was bone-chilling cold, and grew colder the higher they looked. Around the curve, they could see the little rock shelf where the back door was, and the women ahead of them talking to a guard.
"This is not going to work," said Shufti under her breath. "They're showing him some papers. Anyone brought theirs? No?"
The soldier had looked up and was watching the girls with that blank, official expression of someone who was not looking for excitement or adventure in his life.
"Keep moving," murmured Polly. "If it all gets really bad, burst into tears." "That's disgusting," said Tonka.
Their treacherous feet were taking them closer all the time. Polly kept her eyes downwards, as was proper in an unmarried woman. There would be others watching, she knew it. They'd probably be bored. They might not be expecting any trouble. But up on those walls there were eyes fixed on her. They reached the guard. Just inside the narrow stone doorway there was another one, lounging in the shadow.
"Papers," said the guard.
"Oh, sir, I have none," said Polly.
She'd been working out the speech on the way down through the wood. War, fears of invasion, people fleeing, no food. You didn't have to make things up. You just had to reassemble reality.
"I had to leave."
"All right," the guard interrupted. "No papers, no problem. If you just step in and see my colleague, nice of you to join us."
He stood aside and waved a hand toward the dark entrance. Mystified, Polly stepped inside with the others following. Behind them, the door swung shut. Inside, she saw that they were in a long passage with many slits in the wall to rooms on either side. Lamplight shone from the slits. She could see shadows beyond them. Bowman could turn anyone trapped in here into mince. At the end of the corridor, another door swung open. It led into a small room in which there sat, at a desk, a young man in a uniform Polly didn't recognise, although it had a captain's insignia. Standing to one side was a much, much larger man in the same uniform, or possibly two uniforms stitched together. He had a sword. There was that about him. When this man held a sword, it was clearly held, and held by him. The eye was drawn to it. Even Jade would have been impressed.
"Good morning, ladies," said the captain. "No papers, eh? Take off your scarves, please."
"And that's it," thought Polly, as the bottom of her stomach dropped away, "and we thought we were being clever." There was nothing for it but to obey.
"Ah, you'll tell me your hair got shaved off as a punishment for fraternising with the enemy, eh?"
said the man, barely looking up.
"Except for you," he added to Igorina. "Didn't feel like fraternising with any enemies? Something wrong with decent Lobinian boys?"
No, said Igorina.
Now the captain gave them a bright little smile.
"Gentlemen, let's not mess about, shall we? You walk wrong. We do watch, you know. You walk wrong and you stand wrong. You," he pointed to Tonka, "have got a bit of shaving soap under an ear. And you, lad, are either deformed or you've tried the old trick of sticking a pair of socks down your undershirt."
Crimson with humiliation, Polly hung her head.
"Getting in or out disguised as washerwomen," said the captain, shaking his head. "Everyone outside this stupid country knows that one, lads, and most of them make more effort than you boys. Well, for you, the war is over. This place has got big, big dungeons, and I don't mind telling you, you're probably going to be better off in here than outside. Yeah, what do you want?"
Shufti had raised a hand.
"Can I show you something?" she said.
Polly didn't turn, but watched the captain's face as, beside Polly, cloth rustled. She couldn't believe it. Shufti was raising her skirt.
"Oh,"
said the captain. There was an explosion from Tonka, but it was an explosion of tears. They came out accompanied by a long, mournful wail as she threw herself onto the floor.
"We walked so far. We lay in ditches to hide from soldiers. There's no food. We want to work. You called us boys. Why are you so cruel?"
Polly knelt down and half picked her up, patting her on the back as Tonka's shoulders heaved with the force of her sobs.
"It's been very hard for all of us," she said to the red-faced captain. "Have you seen everything you wish to see?"
"If you can take him down, I can garrote the other one with my apron string," whispered Tonka in her ear between howls.
"No, please," said the captain, giving the guard the agonized glance of a man who knows that he's going to be the laughing stock of the whole fort inside the hour.
"Once was quite... I mean, I've seen... Look, I'm completely satisfied. Private, go and fetch one of the women from the laundry. I am so sorry, ladies. I have a job to do."
"Do you enjoy it?" said Polly,
every syllable tinkling with ice.
"Yes," said the captain hurriedly. I mean, no, yes. We have to be careful.
The soldier had returned, trailing a woman. Polly stared.
"Ah, Daphne, some new volunteers for Mrs. Enid," said the captain, waving vaguely toward the squad. "I'm sure she will have some use for them. Oh, certainly, captain," said the woman, curtsying demurely.
Polly still stared.
"Off you go with Daphne, ladies," said the captain. "And if you're hard workers, Mrs. Enidville, I am sure, give you a pass so as we don't have this trouble again.
Shufti put both hands on his desk, leaned towards him, and said,
"Boo!"
His chair hit the wall.
"I may not be clever," she said to Polly, "but I'm not stupid."
But Polly was still staring at Lieutenant Blouse. He'd curtsied surprisingly well. The soldier escorted them along a tunnel which opened onto a ledge overlooking what was either a cave or a room. It was at that level in the keep where there was not much difference. This wasn't a laundry. This was clearly some hot, damp afterlife for those who required punishment with extra scrubbing. Steam rolled across the ceiling, condensed and dripped onto a floor that was already running with water. And it went on forever, washtub after washtub. Women moved like ghosts through the drifting, tumbling clouds of fog.
"There you go, ladies," he said, and slapped Blouse on the rump. "See you tonight, then, Daphne."
"Oh, yes," trilled Blouse.
5 o'clock, then,"
said the soldier, and ambled off down the corridor.
"Daphne," said Polly when the man had gone.
"My nom de guerre," said Blouse. "I still haven't found a way out of the lower areas, but the guards all have keys, and I shall have his key in my hand by 5:30. Pardon?"
"I think Magda, just bit her tongue," said Polly.
"Her? Oh, yes. Well done for staying in character,
Polly," said Polly.
"Good choice of name," said Blouse, leading the way down some steps. "It's a good, common, maid-servant-y sort of name."
"Yes, that's what I thought," said Polly gravely.
Sergeant, Jackram not with you at all?"
said the lieutenant with a trace of nervousness.
"No, sir. He said he was going to lead a charge on the main gate, sir, if we could send him a signal. I hope he doesn't try without one."
"Good heavens, the man's mad," said Blouse. "Splendid effort from the lads, though. Well done. You'd definitely pass for women to the casual observer."
"Coming from you, Daphne, that is a big compliment," said Polly, thinking, "Gosh, I'm really good at keeping a straight face."
"But you didn't need to come after me," said Blouse. "I'm sorry I couldn't get a signal to you, but Mrs. Enid allowed me to stay overnight, you see. The guards don't do so many checks at night, so I made use of my time to look for ways into the upper keep. All gated or really heavily guarded, I'm afraid. However, Private Hauptfiddle has taken a rather a shine to me."
"Well done, sir," said Polly.
"Sorry, I want to be clear, sir," said Tonka. "You have a date with a guard?"
"Yes. And I'll suggest we go somewhere dark, and then, when I've got what I want, I shall break his neck," said Blouse.
"Isn't that going a bit far on a first date?" said Tonka.
"Sir, did you have any trouble getting in?"
said Polly. This had been nagging at her.
"No, not at all. I just smiled and wiggled my hips, and they waved me through."
"Didn't they ask you for your papers?"
said Polly, horrified.
"Well, they did, but I just said I was such a silly girl I kept on losing them. Then I burst into tears, which is very feminine, and then the captain lent me his handkerchief and said it was all right."
Blouse beamed.
"What about you?"
"Oh, we had a little bit of trouble," said Polly. It was a bit awkward for a moment or two."
She fumed inside. It seemed so unfair.
"What did I tell you?" said Blouse triumphantly. "It's all down to thespian ability, but you are plucky lads to try it. Come and meet Mrs. Enid. A very loyal lady. the brave womenfolk of Borogravia are on our side."
And indeed there was a picture of the Duchess in the alcove that served the laundry mistress for an office. Mrs. Enid wasn't a particularly large woman, but she had forearms like jade, a soaking wet apron, and the most mobile mouth Polly had ever seen. Her lips and tongue drew out every word like a big shape in the air. The laundresses, in a cavern full of hissing steam, echoes, falling water, and the thud of wet clothes on stone, watched lips when ears were overwhelmed. When she was listening, her mouth moved all the time, too, like someone trying to dislodge a piece of nut from a tooth. She wore her sleeves rolled up above her elbows. She listened impassively as Blouse introduced the squad.
"I see," she said. "Right, you leave your lads here with me, sir. You ought to get back to the pressing room."
When Blouse had bounced and wobbled back through the steam, Mrs. Enid looked them all up and down and then straight through.
"Lads," she grunted. "Ha! That's all he knows, eh? For a woman to wear the clothes of a man is an abomination unto Nuggan."
"But we're dressed as women, Mrs. Enid," said Polly meekly.
Mrs. Enid's mouth moved ferociously. Then she folded her arms. It was like a barricade going up against all that was ungodly.
"It's not right," she said. "I've got a son and a husband prisoner in this place, and I'm working myself to the bone for the enemy just so's I can keep an eye on 'em. They're going to invade, you know. It's amazing what we hear down here. So what good's rescuing your men going to do 'em when we're all under the heel of the Slovenian hand-painted clog, eh?"
"Slovenia will not invade," said Wazza confidently. "The Duchess will see to it. Be not afraid."
Wazza got the sort of look she always got when someone heard her for the first time.
"Been praying, have you?" said Mrs. Enid kindly.
"No, just listening," said Wazza.
"Nuggan talks, do you, does he?"
"No, Nuggan is dead, Mrs. Enid," said Wazza.
Polly took Wazza's matchstick-thin arm and said, "Excuse us a moment, Mrs. Enid." She hustled the girl behind a huge, water-driven clothes mangle. It heaved and clanked as a background to their conversation.
"Wazza, this is getting..."
Polly's native tongue had no word for freaky, but if she had known about the word, she would have welcomed its inclusion.
"Strange. You're worrying people. You can't just go round saying that a god is dead."
"God, then. Dwindled, I think," said Wazza, her brow furrowing. "No longer with us."
"We still get the abominations."
Wazza tried to concentrate.
"No, they're not real. They're like echoes. Dead voices in an ancient cave bouncing back and forth. The words changing, making nonsense. Like flags that were used for signals, but now just flap in the wind."
Wazza's eyes went unfocused, and her voice altered, became more adult, more certain.
"And they come from no god. There is no god here now."
"So where do they come from?"
"From your fear. They come from the part that hates the other, that will not change. They come from the sum of all your pettiness and stupidity and dullness. You fear tomorrow, and you've made your fear your god. The Duchess knows this."
The mangle creaked onwards. Around Polly the boilers hissed. Water gushed in the runnels. The air was loaded with the smells of soap and damp cloth.
"I don't believe in the Duchess either," said Polly. "That was just trickery in the woods. Anyone had looked round. It doesn't mean I believe in her."
"That doesn't matter, Polly. She believes in you."
"Really?"
Polly glanced around the steaming, dripping cave. "Is she here, then? Has she graced us with her presence?" Wazza had no concept of sarcasm. She nodded.
"Yes."
"Yes."
Polly looked behind her. "Did you just say yes?" she demanded.
"Yes," said Wazza.
"Yes."
Polly relaxed.
"Oh, it's an echo. This is a cave, after all.
Which doesn't explain why my voice doesn't come bouncing back.
"Was, I mean Alice," she said thoughtfully.
"Yes, Polly," said Wazza. "I think it would be a really good idea if you don't talk too much about this to the others," she said. "People don't mind believing in, you know, gods and so on, but they get very nervous if you tell them they're showing up."
She's not going to show up, is she?"
"The person you don't believe in?"
said Wazza, showing a flash of spirit.
"I'm
not saying she doesn't exist, said Polly weakly. I just don't believe in her, that's all.
She's very weak, said Wazza. I hear her crying in the night.
Polly sought for further information in the pinched-up face, hoping that in some way Wazza was making fun of her. But nothing but puzzled innocence looked back.
Why does she cry? She said. The prayers, they hurt her.
Polly spun around when something touched her shoulder. It was Tonka.
Mrs. Enid says we're to get to work, she says. She says the guards come around and check.
It was women's work, and therefore monotonous, back-breaking, and social. It has been a long time since Polly had got her hands in a wash-tub, and the ones here were long wooden troughs where 20 women could work at once. Arms on either side of her, squeezed and pummeled, wrung out garments and slapped them into the rinsing trough behind them. Polly joined in and listened to the buzz of conversation around her. It was gossip, but bits of information floated in it like bubbles in the washtub. A couple of guards had taken liberties, that is, more than had already been taken, and had apparently been flogged for it. This caused much comment along the tub. Apparently, some big milord from Ankh-Morpork was in charge of things and had ordered it. He was some kind of wizard, said the woman opposite. They said he could see things happening everywhere and lived on raw meat. They said he had secret eyes. Of course, everyone knew that city was the home of abominations. Polly, industriously rubbing a shirt on a washboard, thought about this, and thought about a lowland buzzard in this upland country, and some creature so fast and stealthy that it was only a suggestion of shadow. She took a spell on the copper boilers, ramming the stewing garments under the bubbling surface, and noted that in this place, without weapons of any sort, she was using a heavy stick about 3 feet long. She enjoyed the work in a dumb kind of way. Her muscles did all the necessary thinking, leaving her brain free. No one knew for sure that the Duchess was dead. It more or less didn't matter. But Polly was sure of one thing. The Duchess had been a woman. Just a woman, not a goddess. Oh, people prayed to her in the hope that their pleas would be gift-wrapped and sent on to Nuggan, but that gave her no right to mess with the heads of people like Wazza, who had enough trouble as it was. Gods could do miracles. Duchesses posed for pictures. Out of the corner of her eye, Polly saw a line of women taking large baskets from a platform at the end of the room and stepping out through another doorway. She dragged Igorina away from the wash trough and told her to join them.
"And notice everything," she added.
"Yes, Corp," said Igorina.
"Because I know one thing," said Polly, waving at the piles of damp linen, "and it's that this lot will need the breeze."
She went back to work, occasionally joining in the chatter for the look of the thing. It wasn't hard. The washerwomen kept away from some subjects, particularly ones like husbands and sons. But Polly picked up clues here and there. Some were in the keep. Some were probably dead. Some were out there, somewhere. Some of the old women wore the Motherhood Medal, awarded to women whose sons had died for Borogravia. The bastard metal was corroding in the damp atmosphere, and Polly wondered if the medals had arrived in a letter from the Duchess, with her signature printed on the bottom, and the son's name squeezed up tight to fit the space. "We honour and congratulate you, Mrs. L. Lapchick of Well Lane, Munns, on the death of your son, Otto Pyotrhan Lapchick, on June 25 at blank." The place was always censored in case it brought aid and comfort to the enemy. It astonished Polly to find that the cheap medals and thoughtless words did, in a way, bring aid and comfort to the mothers. Those in Munns who had received them wore them with a sort of fierce, indignant pride. She wasn't sure she trusted Mrs. Enid very much. She had a son and a husband up in the cells, and she'd had a chance to size up Blouse. She'd be asking herself, what's more likely, he gets them all out and keeps them safe, or that there's going to be an almighty mess that might well harm us all? And Polly couldn't blame her if she went with the evidence. She was aware of someone talking to her.
"Hmm?" she said.
"Look at this, will you?" said Shufti, waving a sodden pair of men's long pants at her. "They keep putting the colours in with the whites."
"Well, so what? These are enemy long johns," said Polly.
"Yes, but there's such a thing as doing it properly. Look, they're putting this red pair and all the others are going pink."
"And I used to love pink when I was about 7.
It is an established fact that despite everything society can do, girls of 7 are magnetically attracted to the colour pink.
But pale pink? On a man?
Polly looked at the next tub for a moment and patted Shufti on the shoulder.
Yes, it is very pale, isn't it? You'd better find a couple more red items, she said.
But that'll make it even worse, Shufti began.
That was an order, soldier, Polly whispered in her ear. And add some starch.
How much?
All you can find.
Igorina returned. Igorina had good eyes. Polly wondered if they've ever belonged to someone else. She gave Polly a wink and held up a thumb. It was, to Polly's relief, one of her own. In the huge ironing room, only one person was working at the long boards when Polly, taking advantage of the temporary absence of Mrs. Enid, hurried in. It was Daphne. All the rest of the women were gathered around as if they were watching a demonstration, and they were.
"The colour, d'ye see," said Lieutenant Blouse, flourishing the big steaming charcoal-filled iron. "Then the cuffs, and finally the sleeves. Do one front half at a time. You should hang them immediately, but, and here's a useful tip, don't iron them completely dry. It's really a matter of practice, but..."
Polly stared in fascinated wonder. She'd hated ironing.
"Daphne, could I have a word?" she said during a pause. Blouse looked up.
"Oh, Polly," he said. "Yes, of course."
"It's amazing what Daphne knows about pleat lines," said a girl in awe, "and press cloths."
"I am amazed," said Polly. Blouse handed the iron to the girl.
"There you go, Dimphna," he said generously. "Remember, always iron the wrong side first and only ever do the wrong side on dark linens. Common mistake. Coming, Polly."
Polly cooled her heels for a while outside, and one of the girls came up with a big pile of fresh-smelling ironed laundry. She saw Polly and leaned close as she went past.
"We all know he's a man," she said, "but he's having such fun, and he irons like a demon."
"You won't tell the guards?"
"What?" said the girl, grinning. "And do the ironing ourselves? Anyway, we're dying to find out what happens when Daphne goes on her date."
"Sir, how do you know about ironing?" said Polly when they were back in the washing room.
"Had to do my own laundry back at HQ," said Blouse. "Couldn't afford a girl, and the batman was a strict nugganite and said it was girls' work. So I thought, well, it can't be hard, otherwise we wouldn't leave it to women. They really aren't very good here. You know, they put the colours and the whites together."
"Sir, you know you said you were going to steal a gate key off a guard and break his neck," said Polly.
"Indeed."
"Do you know how to break a man's neck, sir?"
"I read a book on martial arts, Perks," said Blouse a little severely.
"But you haven't actually done it, sir?"
"Well, no. I was at HQ, and you're not allowed to practice on real people, Perks."
"You see, the person whose neck you want to break will have a weapon at that moment, and you, sir, won't," said Polly.
"I have tried out the basic principle on a rolled-up blanket," said Blouse reproachfully. "It seemed to work very well."
"Was the blanket struggling and making loud gurgling noises and kicking you in the socks, sir?"
"The socks?" said Blouse, puzzled.
"In fact, I think your other idea would be better, sir," said Polly hurriedly.
"Yes, my other idea. Which one was that, exactly?"
"The one where we escaped from the wash house via the clothes-drying area, sir, after silently disabling 3 guards, sir. There's a kind of moving room down the corridor, sir, which gets winched all the way to the roof. 2 guards go up there with the women, sir, and there's another guard up on the roof. Acting together, we'd take out each unsuspecting guard, which would be more certain than you against an armed man, with all due respect, sir, and that would leave us very well positioned to go anywhere in the keep via the rooftop, sir. Well done, sir." There was a pause.
"Did I, go into all that detail?" said Blouse.
"Oh, no, sir. You shouldn't have to, sir. Sergeants and corporals deal with the fine detail. Officers are there to see the big picture."
"Oh, absolutely. How big was this particular picture?" said Blouse, blinking.
"Oh, very big, sir. A very big picture indeed, sir."
"Ah," said Blouse, and straightened up and assumed what he considered to be the expression of one with panoramic vision.
"Some of the ladies here used to work in the upper keep, sir, when it was ours," Polly went on quickly. "Anticipating your order, sir,
I had the squad engage them in light conversation about the layout of the place, sir. Being aware of the general thrust of your strategy, sir, I think I have found a route to the dungeons. She paused. It had been good flannelling, she knew. It was almost worthy of Jackram. She'd larded it with as many sirs as she dared, and she was very proud of anticipating your order. She hadn't heard Jackram use it, but with a certain amount of care, it was an excuse to do almost anything. General thrust was pretty good, too.